Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with us now for his first appearance since taking office, Mayor Bill de Blasio. Mr. Mayor, belated congratulations on your inauguration, and welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you very much, Brian. It's good to be back.
First things first, did you really drop the groundhog yesterday?
That is a feisty groundhog there, let me tell you. Quite an active animal.
Bit Mayor Bloomberg.
Yes, I did. He didn't bite me, at least. I had him for a while, and then he squirmed out. We got him back. But all I can say is I know how Peyton Manning feels at this point.
Ooh. And Staten Island Chuck did see his shadow, so it's another 6 weeks of snow plows.
Which is quite obvious today.
Anything you want to say about what's happening today with respect to the weather?
Yeah, we have gone very aggressively at this storm. We expect pretty substantial snowfall today. And by the way, two more storms in the course of this week, Tuesday night and then coming up on the weekend. So with this one, we've canceled recycling and trash pickups. We've canceled alternate side street parking. We've got salting operations and plows out early this morning. So there's going to be a very vigorous response.
Want to give us your own big picture take on your first month? I think everyone sees you pushing on the exact fronts you campaigned on: universal pre-K, paid sick leave, stop and frisk. What's the first month headline or lead paragraph if you were writing it yourself?
I think there's a lot of momentum for our agenda. I think the fact is that we have very consistently gone at the issues we think define the inequality crisis in New York City and attack them head on. I could not be happier with the work we're doing together with the city council on the paid sick leave bill. That's going to add 500,000 people covered by April, and we've had tremendous partnership with Speaker Melissa Mark-Viverito on that. We are making a lot of progress on pre-K and after school, and obviously have helped to put that issue in the fore of the public debate. And on stop and frisk, the settlement we reached is truly historic. We've ended years and years, in fact, in some ways, decades of litigation around these issues, and working together with the advocates at the police department, the corporation council, we're actually moving towards the kind of reform we've envisioned for a long time, and we should be having real progress on that in the coming days.
When you get universal pre-K, and it looks like you're going to get it one way or another, those tens of thousands of kids will have to sit somewhere. And I saw the reports of the budget from Friday afternoon that it looks like you'll redirect $200 million of capital funding from charter school construction to pre-K construction. Can you fill us in on what exactly that is?
No, that's not accurate. You know, some of the media accounts were accurate and some were leading and drew their own conclusions inappropriately. We've simply said that we're not spending the $200 million-plus on charter expansion. We have not determined the best use of that money. It will align to our overall agenda. The agenda includes addressing overcrowding in places like Central Queens and in the North Shore of Staten Island and in Tribeca and parts of the East and West Side where there's been wait lists. So one issue is school overcrowding in general. Another issue is pre-K. We have a lot of capital needs. We thought the money would be better used on those needs than on further charter expansion. But the separate point to your core of your question, we do expect to get going with pre-K for September. The white paper that we published last Monday delineates exactly how we are going to find the space right now from existing sources right now, schools that have additional classrooms, community organizations that have done pre-K and childcare that have additional classrooms. We have the teaching core. We have the curriculum in place. So we're going to, by our projection, have full-day pre-K available for 54,000 kids. That's a gain of 34,000 full-day seats if Albany will do the right thing and allow the city of New York to make its own decisions about its own revenue.
There are dozens of schools, charters, and district schools that are supposed to open this coming fall, and from our education department's reporting, they now don't know their destiny. Do you think any of the charter co-locations that were approved last year before Bloomberg left office should be actually canceled?
Well, I think the process was very bad, as usual. I think the entire Bloomberg administration process on co-locations and closures was a broken one that didn't consult with parents and communities effectively. We're reviewing them. We're going to look at what we think of the overall situation and the individual schools involved, and then we'll come back with some answers. So I can safely say This was a horrible process. We're going to be instituting a moratorium from this point forward. But we don't have the answers yet on what we think is viable for the school year starting in September based on these previous actions by the Bloomberg administration.
One more thing on this. There are two lawsuits to stop co-locations that were filed against the Bloomberg administration, as you know, one that public advocate Tish James is a plaintiff in, the other from the UFT. Do you plan to settle or not contest those, like you reversed Bloomberg and settled the stop and frisk suit?
We're going to look at that, too. There's a lot of, as you can imagine, Brian, there's many lawsuits from the previous regime that have to be looked at. So it's a case-by-case situation. We clearly know this, and I've said it very consistently. I think people have seen with this first month we are very focused and consistent in our agenda. So there will be a moratorium on closures and co-locations, and the idea is to create a much better system of consultation with parents and communities before we decide how to proceed thereafter. How that interacts with the lawsuits, I'm not sure. But, you know, we want to show people a very different approach. And I've bluntly said that parents are stakeholders in this school system. They've never been treated that way by the previous administration, and we have to change that. Parents have a right to have a serious say in things affecting their own kids.
My guest is Mayor de Blasio here on WNYC. And the change of politics is so clear from Bloomberg and Quinn to you and Melissa Mark Viverito. That's why you and council were able to agree instantly on a paid sick leave expansion that was bottled up for the last 3 years. With this much unity of vision, what's your second act? What's your third act with inequality fighting legislation that needs both you and the council? Anything you can get specific on?
Well, we're going to be saying a lot more in the State of the City speech next Monday. And the point is that we want to follow through consistently on the agenda laid out over the last year. Clearly, one of the big issues here is addressing both job creation and quality job creation, so improving wages and benefits. Paid sick leave is a part of that. Living wage is a part of that. There'll be a lot of pieces that I delineate based on that notion. You know, the bottom line is fighting inequality. It happens on many, many fronts. I think the great news is the city council wants to be shoulder to shoulder with us in this. So I think you're going to see a lot of emphasis on the issue of how to get more New Yorkers back to work and at levels of wages and benefits that are actually sufficient for a family.
I read that you and council along those lines might next expand the living wage law in a way that Bloomberg and Quinn opposed. Is that correct?
Well, I've said that over the last year. That's one of my aspirations, is to really greatly expand living wage law. Look, this is based on companies we subsidize, companies that get public subsidy that I think should be held to a higher standard. I give President Obama a lot of credit for pushing the spectrum on where we need to go on wages and benefits. Obviously, I give him credit for working on the number one benefit that everyone relies on, which is health insurance. We have to deepen our efforts locally, and if we're subsidizing companies, we have every right to demand of them a living wage for the people they pay.
And this really goes, I think, in a big picture way to one of the core values that you're trying to govern on. And tell me if you would put it this way, that there should be a basic social contract in this country. No American should work full time and still be in poverty. Paid sick leave and living wage are obviously about that. Are you trying to strive toward that as a basic premise at city level?
Exactly right. Look, I'll put a point on it. We have even some city workers, some of our lowest paid city workers, who are living in shelter because they can't afford all the life expenses, rent, and et cetera, for their family. That's unacceptable. So the notion here, and I think you're right, this is a New York City phenomenon, but it's a nationwide phenomenon as well. We have to reconstruct the kind of middle class we used to have. It will require very substantial government investments and actions. It won't happen by letting the free market go unfettered. It won't happen with trickle-down economics. It will only happen with a very systematic strategy to restore the middle class. And what we're doing here with living wage, with paid sick leave, with efforts to create the kind of job training will get people at more higher quality jobs, higher paying jobs, you know, supporting other efforts like the fast food workers and their efforts to get decent wages and benefits. All of these, supporting the airport workers, all of this is of a piece locally to try and do what I wish was being done nationally in a coherent way, which is to restore the middle class.
How about the airport workers? I think one of the things they want is for the city to take jurisdiction of the minimum wage there. I think Port Authority is somehow separate, correct me if I'm wrong, and those private contractors who contract with the Port Authority and then pay such low wages to their workers are exempt from city law. Is that correct?
Well, Port Authority is separate, and Port Authority governs over the airports. I don't know the fine points of the legal dynamics. I do know that the Port Authority could do a lot more to use its power to prevail upon the employers at the airports to provide decent wages and benefits. I'm pleased by some of the, you know, the words we've heard the last few days from the Port Authority. I think there's some progress. But I don't know enough whether we have the legal capacity to intervene. I'm certainly going to use every other capacity I have to intervene.
You know, it would be nice if politicians in all the localities in the area shared your commitment to not living in poverty if you have a job. But since they don't, are you afraid of having other places poach jobs from New York City with their lower standards as you pursue this agenda?
No, I think the fact is that New York City has a lot of strengths. Obviously, our economy is much better diversified than it was 10 or 20 years ago, and I do give Mayor Bloomberg credit for some of the policies that helped that along in terms of real estate values. You know, we're in a very strong position. People want to be here, let's face it. People want to be here from all over the world. So we have a strong hand to play, and I think given just the power of our market, given just the spending power of this city, a lot of companies need to be here and want to be here. So I think we have a very strong foundation to push things like living wage and these better benefits. In fact, I look at the wealth levels in this city, and this gets back to why I think it's right to tax the wealthiest New Yorkers for full-day pre-K and for after school. The wealth levels in the city are astounding. The income inequality in the city is the greatest it's been since the Great Depression, since 1929, and it's growing all the time. We have to take corrective actions to have a strong and stable city for the future. We have the platform to do it. I think if we don't do it, if places like New York don't do it, it won't happen in a lot of other places. So I would argue, in effect, the other way around. We have to set a new standard. It gets back to your earlier question about fighting poverty. We have to set a new standard of what's expected and then challenge other jurisdictions to meet it.
I'm sure you oppose the food stamps cuts coming from Washington. But I also know that food stamp applicants here sometimes feel that HRA has unnecessary bureaucratic hurdles to getting SNAP benefits. Is this something that you heard much about, maybe as public advocate, or perceived to be a problem?
Well, yeah, I do absolutely oppose the cuts in Washington. I think they were very they were mean-spirited, actually. They were really undercutting hardworking folks, and folks have very limited resources and needed food aid, including for children. I think it's unbelievable that they were subject to the cuts that they were. And it's something we'll keep fighting in our federal agenda. But, yeah, look, for years and years until recently, there was widespread fingerprinting as part of the policy of how folks, working people, got food stamps. That's unacceptable, and it's something we're going to work on across the board to destigmatize and take away some of the punitive elements of our approach to helping people in need. You know, that being said, I'm also someone who thinks that there are areas where we have to be tight and careful about what happens with some of the benefit dollars. You know, I'm someone who believes that they shouldn't have been used, for example, for sugary drinks. It's something I agreed with the Bloomberg administration on. I think the governor's right to say that there should be some limitations in terms of types of public assistance being used in inappropriate locations. So I think the balance here is that we destigmatize, we offer an open hand to people in need, but we also put some common sense limitations on.
There have been a few bumps along the way for you this month. One was the AIPAC speech. You acknowledged it was a misstep to try to do that for the pro-Israel lobby group secretly, which they had asked for.
Well, it's not secret. I'm just going to stop you. It was a closed press event, as are many. What we acknowledge very clearly is the media has every, and the public has every right to know when I'm giving a speech. And but for certain exceptional situations, we will publish the text of any such speech.
On the content of your speech there, given your general politics, I might not have figured you for such an ambiguous supporter of Israel, as opposed to someone who'd speak more about a balance between Israeli security and Palestinian conditions and self-determination.
I think you said ambiguous. I assume you meant unambiguous.
Unambiguous. Forgive me. Do you have a bigger picture position than that speech might have reflected?
Well, of course, it's a very complicated dynamic in the Middle East. I think the core of this is I am unabashedly pro-Israel, meaning the state of Israel, the survival of Israel, the sense of alliance that this country needs to have with Israel. I think Israel is in constant danger. I think, bluntly, there's been some real indications of sustained anti-Semitism all over the world. That doesn't mean I agree with every policy of the Israeli government at any given moment, of course. So, and by the way, and an example where I strongly agree with the current administration in Washington, where I agree with President Obama, is on sanctions. I think the deal that has been struck with Iran is an incredible first step. I think it has to be watched very, very carefully. I think if there's backsliding by Iran, there has to be very serious steps taken to address it. So I'll obviously have my differences with any given organization or any given foreign government. But my core point here is I, as the mayor of the city that has this extraordinary deep tie to Israel and the huge Jewish population we have, I do think it's incumbent upon me to defend the state of Israel in the context of a very hostile world.
I want to come back to the core issue of inequality. We're in a national, even global moment, I think, on inequality as a focus. You're leading on it. I think you've helped to change the national conversation, but also President Obama talking more explicitly in these terms, and the new Pope internationally. Have you ever had a conversation with Pope Francis?
I am looking forward to it one day. I've got together with the Cardinal, and we're trying to encourage Pope Francis to visit New York City at some point, and I would be tremendously honored to meet him. I think what he's saying has changed the global discussion. I think he has reframed a discussion of inequality in very sharp and compelling terms. So I'd be honored to meet him, but I'll tell you right now, the whole national and local debate has been positively affected by the clarion call of this Pope.
Mayor de Blasio with us for just another couple of minutes. And let's finish up with a quick lightning round. They don't have to be yes or no answers. I'll call it a soft core lightning round, but short
text. That's a new media phrase, soft core lightning round.
Soft core, I'm inventing that right now.
You can patent it.
There's a group that's been writing into us about some branch libraries doing real estate deals with developers that would give them renovation funding, the libraries, but also shrink their space. Do you support the library leadership in those deals?
I have been critical of the initial plans. I don't know if there's updated ones I haven't seen, but the initial plans around the Central Library in Manhattan and around some of the branches in Brooklyn that I thought did not protect community interests. That being said, I'm always going to look for financially viable long-term plans. I mean, we are in a tough fiscal situation going forward. As you know, 150 open labor contracts, that will have a real cost impact going forward, a real fiscal impact. So I don't take lightly that we have to find a way to pay for things, but I did not like the original plans I saw for those libraries.
Okay. Lapel pin cameras for some police officers. Are you for it or against
yes,
it as part of the final settlement?
In favor. It's part of the settlement we agreed to.
Is a crackdown on jaywalking part of Vision Zero?
No. The fact is we respect that local precinct commanders may, in particular situations, as was true on the Upper West Side recently, determine that special actions need to be taken on jaywalking if there's a real problem point. It's not part of the larger vision of how we approach Vision Zero.
Will you make Lunar New Year, the two Muslim Eids, and Diwali school holidays?
Haven't spoken about Diwali yet on the other two. The goal is to get there. I've said repeatedly it will take time. It is complicated in terms of logistics and school calendar and budget, but it's something I want to get done in a reasonable time frame.
Our music department wants to know, do you have a cultural affairs commissioner in mind yet, or what are you looking for in one?
Soon coming. We have not made that announcement. It's something we'll do in the coming weeks. A lot of people excited and seeking that role. It's been one of the ones where we've gotten some great, great talent coming forward.
When did you and Dante give up on the Super Bowl last night?
I think on the kickoff that began the third quarter, that it was quite evident that that game was irretrievable for the Broncos. And I was supporting Seattle, so I can't say I feel bad about that. But as a game, at that point, it became hard to focus on as much.
And Philip Seymour Hoffman, is there anything you want to say about his life or the way he apparently died?
Quintessential New Yorker in the sense of, you know, just everything we love about this place, his creativity and his amazing ability to portray the human condition, and it's absolutely tragic. And I think, look, what I can say about his life is even someone of that extraordinary achievement grapples with the demon of substance abuse, and we have to keep surfacing this reality in our society and getting people help. It's out there. Help is out there. There's extraordinary organizations that help people, Alcoholics Anonymous and many others, and we've got to keep surfacing it as a public discussion, and also anyone in our lives, we have to keep pushing them towards these positive outcomes and solutions.
So finally, any quick preview of the de Blasio administration month two or anything else you'd like to say to our listeners to finish up?
Well, we're going to take this fight against inequality through a series of different issues. It runs through everything we talk about, whether it's reforming stop and frisk, whether it's addressing wages and benefits, and obviously getting kids pre-K and after school who aren't getting it now. This is all about creating a more just society. There's a lot more ahead on living wage and many other issues. And it's going to be a relentless effort to achieve this agenda. Though what I can say to your listeners is the amount of support for this agenda is astounding. We've seen it time and time again. On the pre-K, by the way, not only did we see it in the public opinion polls in New York City, the polls in the suburbs and upstate showed just as much vigor for the plan. So I think it's a moment in history where people want inequality addressed, and we're going to do that relentlessly.
Mr. Mayor, thank you so much for coming on today, and I look forward to talking to you regularly, I hope, during your administration.
Looking forward to it, Brian. Take care, man.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now your calls. Folks, how is Mayor de Blasio doing? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. React to anything he said in that interview and his first month on the job, 212-433-9692. How's Mayor de Blasio doing in general or on any specific policy that you like, don't like, or ambivalent about? Your calls on de Blasio at the 1 month point, 212-433-WNYC, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, or tweet at Brian Lehrer. We'll take your de Blasio calls right after this. It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everybody. Coming up shortly, the latest in our series, Context and a Movie. Today, the real-life scandal behind American Hustle. And since Slate film critic Dana Stevens will be here for that, we'll also use the opportunity to talk more about Philip Seymour Hoffman. But first, let's take some of your calls on how you think Mayor de Blasio is doing after 1 month in office. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Susan in Jackson Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Susan.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I was calling in to say in Jackson Heights this morning, the plows have been coming through all morning, doing a very good job.
So an A on snow removal in Jackson Heights.
I'm so happy that he got in, and I like, you know, his agenda, and I like his stands on things. So I just wish him well.
Thank you very much. Emma in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to comment on the mayor's comments about Israel, specifically his unequivocal support for Israel, and just remind him that for all the excitement and the freshness that he brought to his constituent space, I'm an Arab American, and I'm part of that constituency also. And for the tale of two cities that he is, you know, going around and talking about, we also are part of his constituency that he should remember. There is also that tale of two demographic groups, and he has alienated the Arab American community in his unequivocal support for Israel and just disregarding the other side. There's two stories here. I also support Israel, but that doesn't mean that that's it. There's other sides to the story.
And you didn't find the way he tried to balance that in his answer just before to be sufficient to you?
Did you? I didn't hear balance. I didn't hear any balance. I heard unequivocal, unambiguous. My role as mayor is to support them. I didn't hear any balance. I didn't hear any mention even of any other side.
Emma, thank you very much. Trudy in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I remember when Bill de Blasio got arrested for supporting Long Island College Hospital. As a matter of fact, he held my hand when I was about to get arrested for supporting the hospital. And now that we're happy to say he's mayor, we'd like to know, I really need to know, what he is going to do to keep that a full-service hospital.
And I know they're working on that, and they're trying to get with Governor Cuomo some federal money so that it could be financially sustainable. And he acknowledges some restructuring of some kind is going to be necessary because it can't just be losing money and losing money. But it didn't come up in our conversation. I didn't choose to bring it up in our conversation right now. I think he's been talking about it a lot, and that his answer to you would be something like that he's looking for a kind of more regional approach so that even if that hospital on its own had some problems, it was part of a larger system that could still support the need for that hospital that exists in the community. So obviously he's with his commitment to that and interfaith, going to do more on that coming down the pike. We did talk to public advocate Tish James about that on Friday. If you want to go back and listen to that interview, I think they say about the same thing on that. Andrea in Red Hook, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. I missed most of your interview with Mayor de Blasio. Did you guys cover Sandy recovery at all?
No.
Okay. Well, a big exclamation point, question mark, why not? There's just still so many people really barely recovering. The Build It Back program is not meeting people's needs. And there's something called an action plan that's going to be put into effect. There's a comment period. Everyone can chime in. If you go to nyc.gov, find the action plan, comment on Build It Back, comment on your unmet needs.
Right. And as to why we didn't talk about it, there were so many topics that we didn't talk about in, a short interview, and we have to make decisions in each one, and maybe not this time and maybe next time. But do you feel that the de Blasio administration is not being responsive or is being responsive? Has anything changed as far as you're concerned since the since the Bloomberg administration, for better or for worse, or what's your particular concern here, or what do you need that you think they may not be hearing, because they're certainly listening to this segment?
Sure. Well, it's early days yet, so this is a complex situation. The Office of Long-Term Planning and Sustainability is an incredible team, and I hope they remain on. I trust that they will. A lot of issues that need to be dealt with, and we just need more attention for those that are not getting their needs met. Their houses are gone, or they're gutted, and people are unaware of this. This is a very continuing story.
Andrea, thank you very much, and good luck. Danny in Rockaway Park, you're on WNYC. Hi, Danny.
Yes, good morning, Brian. How are you and
okay. Everybody
there?
Good.
We want to really thank him. I got to give him a plus. He extended the Rockaway Ferry, and we're very excited about that. And we're hoping to have a thank you press conference here in Rockaway in the near future. And I hope he takes our invitation. Very happy about it.
Thank you very much. Henry in New Rochelle, you're on WNYC. Hi, Henry.
Hi, Brian. As to the mayor and how things are going, I wish him well. I suspect he'll have some difficulties down the road because you can't squeeze blood from a stone, and eventually somebody's going to have to pay for these proposals, and I suspect there'll be a pushback. I certainly hope so. But I really was curious to hear from you what your take is on sort of the overarching analysis of the mayors and others income inequality, it has a sense to it that it's someone's fault. In other words, those people whose incomes are deemed inadequate are in their place in the difficult spot they're in because someone else has done well. there is that tone, that scent to it of blame, of fault. And I wonder if I can get your thoughts on that.
Well, my impression is that there isn't very much of that. That there is sometimes in some rhetoric, oh, those bankers or whatever, but even that is often very specific about, policies and practices within certain corporations or regulation that allows things to go on. And I think, for example, in the interview that we just had, what you heard from Mayor de Blasio was not any particular blaming of the rich, but going through specific things that he wants to bring up the bottom with respect to the social contract we were discussing, that people who work full time for a living shouldn't wind up below the poverty line. And so dealing with living wage and paid sick and things like that, he's going to run into difficulty, as any mayor would, with raising the large middle or raising a lot of people to an expanded middle that he hopes to create, because it's always hard to attract the right kinds of higher paying middle class jobs and not just make things a little better for the people at the bottom. I think that's going to be the thing that he hasn't really started to address yet. That's going to be very different for him, difficult for him, as it would for any mayor. And you say you can't get blood from a stone. Well, he would say, who's the stone, that the only tax hike that he's proposing is a few thousand dollars more on people making $500,000 or more. So, that's my analysis, is that it really has to do with expanding the shrinking middle class, not just on Mayor de Blasio's part. And look at the Times today. The Times has a really revealing and troubling story about high-end retailers in this country doing really, really well, and the regular retailers, like they use Red Lobster as an example, where business is down, whereas Capital Grill and other higher-end eateries, business is up, as a reflection of the fact that there's a shrinking middle class in this country, while those who are well off are doing very, very well and consistently so, which is not to blame them, but which is to say there's a serious problem that needs to be addressed.
Can you still hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. Let me sort of give you a little bit of informed gossip.
Do it in about a minute, okay?
All right, sure. I had lunch before the election with a couple of substantial citizens, people who employ a lot of people in the city and who make things happen. And they were nervous. They were upset because they drew, according to them, a straight line from the mayor's agenda and background and intentions, and saw bad things happening. And I think too little attention is being paid, frankly, by the media, and which includes you, and sensible people in general, to the notion that nothing is cost-free, that responsibility is required as much as is a just and fair social policy.
Right. And Henry, I'm going to leave it there, but I think that's one of the challenges for the de Blasio administration. Time will tell whether these new requirements for business, for their lower-end employees, whether whatever tax hike, if any, gets approved on the wealthiest 1%, the $500,000 plus, whether that makes businesses flee or any other thing. And obviously, he's willing to gamble that he can improve the lives of people without chasing out people who will feel excluded or will feel that their money is better made somewhere else to the detriment of everybody. And there you go. Henry, thank you for your call. Keep calling us. And everybody, thanks for your calls telling us how you think Mayor de Blasio is doing. You can keep posting to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Coming up next, the latest in our series, Context and a Movie. Today, the real-life scandal behind American Hustle. And since Slate film critic Dana Stevens will be here for that, we'll also use the opportunity to talk about Philip Seymour Hoffman. Stay with us.